Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. In March, we taped a live episode of Louisiana Eats in the Grand Ballroom of the Royal Sonesta Hotel. There, I was joined by the splendid tables Lynn Rosetta Casper and Road Foods' Jane and Michael Stern. Stay tuned to hear how the splendid table began and how the Stern's obsession with food has kept them on the road for over 30 years. Pay close attention, and you'll even hear the answer to this week's culinary quiz question. Your front row seat is reserved on this week's Louisiana Eats. And now, Louisiana Eats goes behind the scenes with the splendid table. I asked Lynn where her interest in food began.
Oh, Lord. Has anyone read David Copperfield? Do you remember it began with I was born? Okay, I was born and raised just outside of New York City in North Jersey. And it was the kind of environment where when you stopped talking about the meal you were eating, you started talking about the meal you were going to eat.
Just like New Orleans.
Exactly. And I fell backwards into it. I was in the right place at the right time. Back in the late 60s and early 70s in New York, when the food revolution was just beginning, this immense interest in food. Being Italian-American, of course, my great passion was Chinese food. Well, there were two things. A, I had to get out of town. You know, I went to a high school where everybody married their sweethearts. Come on. You know, you had a big city out there right across the George Washington Bridge. So the first chance I got, I went away to college. And I ended up going to the School of the Month Club. But what I really wanted to do was to get into that city and start living a life. And I essentially became fascinated by Chinese food, which you could spend 8 lifetimes learning about. And we would do banquets every month at home. And friends started saying, would you teach us? And I said, this is ridiculous because it's me reading the book the night before the course. And the standing line was, you know the book to read, you know. So that's how it started. And then the first department store in the entire country that ever had an independent food program heard about me and asked me if I would become their, in quotes, gourmet consultant. And I thought that was a full-time job. I had a theater group, a street theater group at that time, kids theater. We did street theater and improv. And I was sort of balancing, which should I do? And I ended up taking that job. And Julia Child... The first time Julia Child cooked in public, it was in my kitchen at that store.
What was the store? Can you tell us?
Abraham and Strauss. And if you live in New York and you live in Brooklyn, New York, which is where I lived, it is an institution. And I set out to learn everything I could from everyone I could. So I'd scraped together enough money. I gave up the Chinese cooking only because I realized I had to be of that culture to really understand it. I still will be eating Asian food, probably before I'll be eating Italian food, because I'm a bitch about Italian food. But at any rate, the point was that I was sitting there surrounded by some of the greatest people in food, and I think the one thing I had on my side was I was smart enough to know I knew nothing. And that's how it all started.
I think everybody would really like to know about your personal life. For instance, you were in...
How personal?
Well, you know, within the bounds of exactly today, you spent some time in my home kitchen with my 3 Chinese pugs. So what's it like in your home kitchen?
Well, first of all, my home kitchen does not look like a magazine cover. My home kitchen has my fabulous Wolf 6-burner stove. They don't even make it anymore. Her name is Babe. She's 37 inches wide. She juts out an unfashionable 30 inches from the wall. And she's got 6 burners, and I can put 6 12-inch skillets side by side on that baby and not lose a bit of burner space. 17,500 BTU per burner.
I have burner envy. Yes,
and,
I do.
And I went around, when I went around to shop for Babe, this was what, you know how that first cookbook,
yeah.
If you have made any money, you're going to make it in the first royalty check. Everybody does something different. Well, I bought Babe. And my mother was so funny because she said, you spent that much money on a stove. It has no clock. It has no window. You can't look in it. And there's no light in the oven. Wow, you were cheated.
You have already explained to us about your very, very early relationship with Julia Child. And we actually have a little clip of you and Julia on the Splendid Table. So could we hear that little clip, please?
Julia, welcome to the Splendid Table.
Well, it's lovely to be with you, Lynn.
It's good to have you here. And the first thing that I want to know is, how did you begin? Because from what I understand, you didn't grow up saying, I think I want to become a food professional.
No, I was always very hungry. And my mother didn't cook at all because I grew up in the teens and 20s when everybody just about had a maid because it wasn't expensive. We had all the people, the immigration, and so almost everyone had a maid. So mother never cooked at all. She could make some funny kind of an English cheese dish. That was about it. But I...
Now, Lynn, I can't help but say, I've listened to this clip several times preparing for tonight, and it seems like there was a lot of rustling going on. What exactly was Julia doing? And could you give us a little behind-the-scenes look at that interview?
Well, let's put it this way. Julia, first of all, was wonderful, especially when the show was beginning and four people were listening. Anytime we asked, she came on. But the other thing you have to know, of course, is that Julia had been doing this for years. Julia was reading the paper. And if you notice, she's totally present, but she's reading the paper. And... That was Julia. God bless her.
Well, that must have been some sound engineer to catch all that ambient noise.
Oh, Jess, boy, we just loved it. We really did.
I would like to invite your collaborator, your producer on the Splendid Table, your co-author of How to Eat Supper, by the way, this year's James Beard Award nominee for How to Eat Weekends. Let's welcome Sally Swift.
You've just joined us. You're listening to the live taping of Louisiana Eats Behind the Scenes with Lynn Rosetta Casper of Splendid Table.
I'm coming back. I like the band.
Sally, Lynn, give us an idea of how did this collaboration begin?
I called her. Total cold call. I had been working in television and actually working for Prince, which is a really wonderful thing to do, but you do get tired of getting the call in the middle of the night saying, get the band together, click. You know, I mean, it can get old after a while. And I had picked up Lynn's book, and I devoured it. I mean, I just was utterly stunned by it. And found out she was in St. Paul, and I had just moved back, and I was done with Prince. And you pick it up from there.
Well, the background from my side was that the book had gotten a lot of attention, and you were one of the flavors of the month, which meant television producers were approaching you. And then I get a call from Sally, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, another one. You know, but she was talking about radio, and I thought she's going to want to do a recipe show. So I thought, all right, I'll have lunch with her.
Like, so we had lunch. She was a little cool. She was a little, I mean, we left and she basically said, well, baby, you get some money for a pilot and we'll go. And I had money in like 2 weeks.
You were incredible. You really,
but
I'd
we,
expected
But
nothing.
We, and this is the beautiful thing about public radio, because of course, you know, from the earth it comes in many ways. And we had these excellent partners in Minnesota Public Radio. And Lynn and I each made $80 a week for the first...
Oh, sweetie.
No, $80 a show.
No. We made $25 a show.
Well, for the pilots we did.
You all aren't helping my career.
I know, no, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. No, this was 45 years ago.
It was 17 years ago, though. But
yeah. And one of the first calls you made...
was to Jane and Michael.
To Jane and Michael Stern.
Actually, was the first call I made.
And how did you know about
them? Well, I loved them, and I had...
In
this seemed perfect to me.
If you worked in food, you knew about these two. In fact, 90% of the people working in food who were their contemporaries wanted to kill them. Because these two had created a genre that everyone, when their first Road Food book came out, there were probably 90, 100 of us who were working in the, in the 70s. Why didn't I think of this? And then you realize, if you had thought of it, would you have done it with the wit and with the, the smarts and the wise-ass piece, which I love. No offense, guys, but that they've done. And so it was something when Sally said the Stearns was like, if we could get them, right? I mean, and we did. And we were forever thankful.
We still like each other, too, all of us,
which is pretty amazing.
And so Jane and Michael Stern, the champions of road food, please come join us at the party.
I'm going to pull these chairs over.
Of course, our house band, Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, were with us that night to provide musical interludes.
Oh, thank you. I am so glad the road brought you all to Louisiana Eats. Thank you. Give us a little snapshot into your life and what that's like.
It
used
to be more difficult.
We've written 42 books, and we were at Gourmet for 18 years. And we won 6 James Beard Awards, and we've been on their show for a billion years. So to fill all of those coffers, we had to travel a tremendous amount. Now that we're old and crippled, we're sort of not quite... We're working at Savior magazine now, doing articles for them. When we first started at Gourmet, before Ruth Reichel took over, we were very intimidated because... Quite frankly, we don't know crap about food.
Well, when we started writing, Gourmet was like the enemy. I was sort of like, this is what we're... who wants that pretentious stuff,
So we were called in after our first article because we were in Shenandoah, Iowa. And Gail called us into the office and...
She said, I have to talk to you about your expense account. We thought, oh, no.
Right, and she said... How can you possibly stay at a motel that costs $18 a night when our other food writers are in Singapore and they're spending $300 a bottle of wine? She said, you have to spend more. And we said...
Those were the good old days, right?
We were at the Tall Corn Motel in Shenandoah, Iowa, which was the poshest, hotel in Shenandoah. So... we've always gone our own route. I mean, we've always been kind of weird. And the only people who got us early on were Jim Beard, who we went to see every Sunday. He became like daddy. And he had a pug named Percy, who I made cookies for, and Percy vomited them up.
Right.
And MFK Fisher, she took us under her wing, and, so we had good people.
So, out of all the places you've been and all the food you've eaten, what is the most obscure place that you traveled to, and what was the food that you went there to eat?
That cremated fish in North Carolina.
Yes.
Now, you're not talking black and red fish.
No, it's river herring that swims up the river. We've talked about this on the show. The herring shacks along the Roanoke River, and from January through April, when the fish start swimming upriver, they used to catch millions of them. Now they catch dozens, and you can get them either sunny side up, which is just tossed in the oil and pulled right out, or cremated, which is the way most people get them there, because you basically can eat the entire thing, and you're just left with a backbone.
Well,
do you want us to tell you? We're actually doing a story now about testicle festivals all around the country, but you probably don't want to hear about that.
Well, if you want weird food, St. Louis is the weird food capital.
It is.
Because they have their brain sandwiches, pig snout sandwiches.
Gooey butter cake.
It's gooey just, butter cake. And what's that thing that makes no sense?
Oh, the thing that nobody can the St. Paul sandwich. Which is unique to St. Louis. Nobody there knows why it's called a St. Paul. It's basically egg foo young on white bread with a slice of American cheese. And very inexpensive Chinese restaurant serves it.
Wow.
And nobody knows why or how.
Okay. Well, Michael,
Yes, Poppy, what?
As clearly evidenced, you know, we'll leave the testicle festival behind.
Thank you.
But I would like to say that you have certainly displayed a big proclivity for hot dogs. You obviously...
Are we talking like in Freudian terms about this hot dog?
Like, audience can be the judge of that.
You know, when he starts on the splendid table... describing them taut.
Well, you know, as a matter of fact,
the three of us can't.
Is this an intervention? A hot dog intervention?
Let's see how Michael really feels about hot dogs.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is that in Chicago, they do make the best hot dogs in the world. And what they are all beef wieners. That are cooked to a kind of perfect succulent so that when you bite into it, the skin kind of bursts and sort of garlicky beef juices flow out of the dog. And it works because these dogs are bedded down in soft poppy seed buns.
Michael,
Chicago,
yeah. Michael, this
just
is
see him. He's turning.
You can't stop me.
He's turning this red as he's talking.
Wait a minute. This is food porn. I mean, we're going to be taken off the air with this stuff. But don't stop.
He's wiggling in his seat.
All right. Yeah, this is really. I really go crazy when I think about a great Chicago Red Hot because the fact is you can't get them anywhere else. Once the dog is bedded down in the bun, you tell the counter man to drag it through the garden. And what that means is, it doesn't mean just mustard, ketchup. What it means is a little yellow mustard, pickle lily, strips of green pepper, cucumber discs, pickle spears, slices of whole fresh tomato, maybe some onions, and then these little tiny incendiary peppers they call sport peppers, all on top, then a dash of celery salt. Now this is...
Take a breath, dear.
Virtually impossible.
He's really on a roll.
Oh, I can't stop.
I can hear it.
Just one question By any chance, have you ever encountered a Bourbon Street Lucky Dog?
No comment, okay?
Okay. Well,
Let me just tell you how weird Michael is to travel with. I mean, we've been traveling together for almost 40 years, and there has never been a piece of food that has hit the table in front of him that he hasn't photographed. I mean, we have a photographic archive of, you know, of a crust of bread from 1983.
I'm going to tell on Jane, though, because about half of my pictures, especially from the early days, are pictures of a beautiful slice of pie with one bite taken out of it. Because she's too impatient.
But Michael, you know, this is before we all had little digital cameras, and Michael's father owned a camera store in Illinois, so we would get these, like, you know, Hasselblads with, like, professional lighting. And we'd be in the middle of Kentucky eating a burgoo sandwich, and Michael's lighting it like Cecil B. DeMille, you know. And people are coming up to me, and they're saying, what's he doing? And I got tired of, you know, endlessly trying to explain what we do for a living, which nobody understands. So I said, he was just released from a mental hospital. And I said, he's harmless, but just let him do it. And people would cover and say, sir, would you like to take
a people brought me empty plates. You
know, it was much easier. Much easier.
Well, you all have certainly given us a delicious taste. Let's have a big round of applause.
For our Louisiana Eats Culinary Quiz Question of the Week, brought to you with support from French Market Coffee. The answer to this week's question, what is the new name for veal that comes from humanely raised male calves, is rose veal. Rose veal allows many a young male calf a very happy free-range life during his year on Earth. Now, let's see who this week's lucky winner is. Thomas Walsh, our Louisiana Eats producer, is manning the grinder.
As a teenager, I was happiest when tormenting my vegetarian sister. At restaurants, I'd peruse the menu, find the veal parmesan, and then stare her right in the face as I ordered it for dinner. But enough about this bratty behavior. Our prize goes to Amanda L. Green of New Orleans for her winning response. Send us in your answer for a chance to win.
Our lucky winner will be receiving 3 full-size bags of French Market coffee, including dark roast with chicory, and French roast. This week's question is, what are the names of the intrepid road food reporters heard every week on the Splendid Table? Send your answers to Louisiana Eats at WWNO.org by midnight Sunday night. All correct answers received will be mixed together in our French Market coffee grinder, and one lucky winner will be chosen at random and announced on next week's show. Again, this week's question is, what are the names of the road food reporters heard every week on the Splendid Table? Email those answers by midnight Sunday night to Louisiana Eats at WWNO.org with culinary quiz in the subject line, and you could be next week's lucky winner. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, artist Gus Bloch gives us a peek of his Leah Chase portrait that's headed for the National Portrait Gallery in Washington, D.C.
Well, my art representative, Eugene Demude, presented me with the idea. I was working on another project at the time, and for some reason, it just clicked. And so he called me and said, listen, I think I might have something for you. You know, I said, well, what is it? What do you think about documenting Leah Chase? I said, sold. I'm done.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at WWNO.org. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from French Market Coffee and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse, Palace Cafe, and the Bourbon House, Lights Egan Funeral Homes, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Cookin' Magazine. Theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, produced at Piety Street Recording. Thanks to Thomas Walsh, our associate producer and sound engineer. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO.